You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3, powered by Scarborough Nissan. Driving satisfaction. It's the all-in clear-out sales event. Finance a 2020 Rogue S for 0% APR for 84 months, or get an up to $5,500 cash purchase bonus on select other models. Scarborough Nissan, Eglinton Avenue East at Warden.
Final hour, Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and up on TSN 2. Brian Hayes, the O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill. Jamie Noodles McLennan, our buddy Pierre LeBrun, later this hour on Game 6 between Vegas and Colorado tonight. The Islanders are going to play Tampa in the next round, and the Habs are going to sit there and wait to see.
When's that Vegas firing or Colorado. Up Tampa Islanders?
I would think relatively soon. You know,
Saturday night?
Yeah, Game 6 is tonight. I think Game 7 is Saturday. Either Saturday Monday. Afternoon or Sunday night.
You think so? You think it'll be that early?
Well, why not? I mean, yeah, I guess Tampa's waiting, and the Islanders are through. I guess you got to travel down to Tampa. Maybe Monday night. But it won't be much longer than that. They want to get going here. We're into, you know, it's June 10th, and the quicker you can get this done, the better.
Absolutely.
Like, get moving here if you can. The Jays are back in action tonight. George Springer ran the bases today and felt good. And Charlie Montoyo said, quote, "for sure closer," end quote, to starting that rehab assignment. So – that's how the Jays generally operate. Yeah, we're closer, getting a little bit closer. Yeah. Okay, well, we'll find out. And hopefully Kevin Biggio, who still is continuing to rehab, will be back with the team when they get to Boston as of this weekend. So we'll see what's up with Kevin. So Biggio should be back soon. Maybe Springer next week. You know, maybe. Maybe by the time they play the Yankees early next week, that'd be a big, big haul for the Jays, and that'd be a big boost. You get Biggio and Springer back. So – big game last night. Manoah looked pretty good. Got the win. Ryu on the mound tonight. So we'll get to that a little bit later in the hour. The Euros start tomorrow. And I believe it's still being called the Euro 2020. It's 2021. It's very confusing. It's going to be like that with the Olympics, right? The 2020 Olympics in 2021 in Tokyo, Japan. So get ready for that over the next, you know, couple of months. But we've established that I will take Scotland. Noodles, you will take Hungary.
Yep.
Oh, you have to take a long shot team.
Poland.
Who are you taking?
Poland.
Poland's a good one.
Yeah.
Okay. They're actually a pretty good team, I think, but I'll give you Poland. Okay, so we agreed to Noodles having the first pick, then the O-Dog, then myself, and then we go back to the start for whatever reason, and okay. Noodles will pick again, then O, then myself.
I don't go to the NHL draft, and there's no snake there, so why would we do one here?
Because we're adults, and this is supposed to be remotely fair, but it's all good. We don't know what we're doing anyway. So, Noodles, you go ahead and pick. Who's your first pick in the Euro 2020 Overdrive Draft?
Belgium.
Wow, sneaky pick, I think. I think that's a sneaky pick.
I think it's a pretty sneaky pick.
They're getting good odds, though. Like, I'm looking at a book, I think, overseas, and they're, like, third in odds. They're going off at about 6-1 right now.
Yeah, I'll take a Belgium. Yeah.
I like it. Belgian waffles in Belgium. And
exactly. I
look
love
at
it.
You. Okay. Oh, you are officially on the clock with your first pick, Euro 2020 Overdrive Draft.
Je m'appelle Jeff avec France.
That is a great little pick, a sneaky little pick, and I like it. I like it a lot.
Sneaky, they're favored. How do you not go like
they are
on.
Favored? I know. Noodles left them for you. And
I have conflicting reports that France has won. Belgium
Bro,
is right there.
You just
there
took
too,
Belgium, so. Dude. Who told you that?
Somebody is texting
people
him
I know. Or... people I know about soccer are like, don't mess with that France team. So there you go.
This
Good
is where it gets difficult because like England is getting a lot of love. They never win anything, ever. And it's like, do I want to be on their bandwagon? What are the chances England finally pulls this off? They had a great World Cup a couple of years ago. I'll talk myself into it. I'll take England with my first pick. I'm on Scotland and England. Yeah. These teams won't even make it through to the elimination rounds.
Love it. Love
it. Good little start.
It.
Noodles
Love
back
it.
On the
all
clock.
All right. Let me think. Because it's a coin flip. Somebody in this household wants me to take one.
I know who you're taking. Yep. I know who you are.
And I want to go with the other. See, that's the problem.
Okay.
I'm going to go I'll go with Portugal.
Wow.
I'm going off the grid. I'm going off the grid. Somebody else wanted Italy. Okay. And I told her to take a lap.
Well, you know what this guy's going to do, I think. Go ahead. Who do you
Tutto
like?
Tutto bene, forza! Goal!
Yeah.
Oh, from the bridge. I love it. Yeah. So you're on Poland, France, and Italy. Noodles, you're on Hungary, Belgium, and Portugal.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at, there's two options for me. I'm either taking Spain or I'm taking Germany. Both powerhouses, both know how to get things done. Germany always goes deep in these tournaments. Or
Dude,
it seems
they
that
are.
Way.
They're legit. They're always
They
legitimate
always show up.
Contenders.
They always show up. And I'm going to ride with them. I'll take
Spain?
No, I'm going to take Germany. Take Germany. Yeah, I'm on Scotland, England, and Germany.
All right.
So there you have it. You guys want to do one more pick?
I was just going to say one bonus.
Okay, but we snake back. We snake back for the bonus
Dude,
pick.
Be oh. quiet. It's
All right, go
noodles,
ahead,
noodles, you're up. Noodles,
ahead,
you're up.
Let me see here. So, Spain.
Yep. Good pick. I love how we're talking as if we know what we're talking about. Good pick. Great pick.
A legit pick.
Noodles got a squad. He's got a squad. The O-Dog on the clock. Final pick.
I am going to throw this little guy at you. A little place I go for tea in the summer in the Netherlands.
Yes. Are they known for tea? I thought they were known for something else.
I don't know.
I think I know what they're known for.
Yeah. The Netherlands.
Right. Now I am absolutely struggling. Like this, every big team is basically off the board. Because it's a big drop. Once you get past the Netherlands, Croatia had that great run a couple of years ago.
What about Croatia?
They did. They had a great run. I know Denmark's always pretty solid, too.
Turkey.
Yep. You know what? I'll go with the Danes. Freddie Anderson.
Yeah?
I'll go with Denmark. Yep. My team is struggling, but I'll take Denmark. Okay. There you go. I like it. These are who we're riding with. I don't even – you know what we should have done was look at all the groups. We probably have three teams in the same group and –
Yeah,
probably going to be a mess, but
cares.
Who cares? We're on the bandwagon and we love it. Yeah. So Grant Wall will join us here in just a moment, and we'll basically just ask him about our teams and whether or not he thinks they're good or not, and we'll see what he's up to because he's the host of Football with Grant Wall podcast. He's been covering the sport for a long, long time, and I want to ask him about the Canadian side of things as well with Davies, with David, like those two young studs. It feels like Canadian soccer is finally getting a little bit of love, a little bit of attention, and maybe some deserved, promotion. And like the potential in 2026 when the World Cup comes to North America that if Canada's in it, and they're probably going to have to get a free pass to be in it, I don't know if they'll be able to play their way in, they might be able to do some damage because those young guys are not going to be young anymore. They're going to be in their primes. So he's the host of Football with Grant Wall podcast. He's a New York Times best-selling author. He's been covering soccer, a.k.a. football, for a long, long time. Here's Grant Wall. What's happening, Grant?
Hey, how are you guys?
Yeah, we're doing pretty well. We're just mentioning up here in Canada with guys like Alphonso Davies and David and other young studs who are making noise in Europe. Up here in Canada, we're starting to feel a little bit optimistic, which I got to say is the first time in like 30 years. Are you sensing it? I know you're on the other side of the border and you're looking, you have your eyes on Europe and international football, but is Canada getting any attention specifically because of Davies and what he brings?
Well, I mean, like anyone who has their eyes on European soccer year round will see Canadian players playing for the best teams like Alphonso Davies. Jonathan David just won the French title with Lille. There are very, very good Canadian players these days, and I think my sense is there's more optimism around this Canada men's team than I can remember. So that's exciting. They're in a position now where they're two games away from getting to the final round of CONCACAF World Cup qualifying for the first time since, I think, the 98 qualifying campaign. And to the World Cup potentially for the first time since 86. Now, right. I think it's going to be a challenge to qualify for this World Cup, but not outside the realm of possibility. When you have players who are playing at the highest levels in Europe, anything can happen. And so these two games against, is it Haiti? Are pretty important over the next week.
Grant, for this upcoming Euros, we drafted four pack of teams per person. If I told you my four pack was Poland, France, Forza, and the Netherlands. What would you think of my squad?
What was the third one?
Forza.
Italy. He's trying to be Forza. A hero.
Italy, okay.
Yeah, Forza. Italy.
I thought you knew those nicknames and stuff like that.
Portuguese say Forza, too.
Yeah, exactly. There you go.
But that sounds pretty darn good to me, actually. I mean, France is, on paper, the best team in the world. You know, they're the world champions. And the favorite here in this tournament, though, I do think England is a team that it has a ton of talent, obviously got to the semis of the World Cup in 2018, and they could potentially have 6 of 7 games at Wembley, including the semis and the final and all of the group games. So Italy's an interesting one because I like kind of how they've flown under the radar a little bit, which is odd for a multi-time world champion, but Mancini seems to have them playing some pretty good soccer and starting to make up for failing to qualify for the World Cup in 2018. You say Netherlands?
Yep.
Yes,
Netherlands.
Sir.
Yeah, there's some...
I mean, bummer that Van Dijk's not available. Still a very good team. Frank de Boer is... I just don't understand how he got the job. I mean, he's failed upward time and time again, whether it's Inter, Crystal Palace, Atlanta United. He's been a failure at every single place, and somehow he got the Netherlands job.
Al's brother.
That's a brutal pick.
Basically,
so what you're saying, Grant,
this list is garbage. That's basically what you're saying. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I have an assistant GM, and he texts me at the last second and says, Netherlands is never going to let you down.
He has no idea what he's talking about.
Why would he send something like that?
He's a buffoon.
Then we get
why.
A professional on saying he doesn't have any idea how anyone associated with the club is even alive.
The coach is out to lunch. I love it.
That one hurts.
No business being there. Thank you, Al's brother.
Well, thank you, Grant. We appreciate the honesty. We love having you on. Grant Wall is with us. We love the term group of death. We need this to be utilized more in North America. Like, there has to be, instead of a great division, call it the group of death because it's the greatest term. And I guess everyone's labeled Group F, which Hungary will be in that, but Portugal, France, and Germany. I think it goes without saying that is the group of death. Is that how you see it, Grant? And is there another group in particular that you would be fearful of if you were a supporter of one of those teams?
No, easily that's the group that's the hardest group in the tournament. There's the stakes aren't as high as they could be, though, just because third place teams in the group can advance because of the structure of the tournament. It's 24 teams. And Portugal, if you remember back in 2016, finished third place in its group and then advanced and went on to win the tournament. So it's certainly possible that all three of Portugal, France, and Germany will advance. But I think one thing to look at here is because this Euros for the first time is being held across all of Europe, there's a lot more teams that are going to be playing at home, like in front of home fans. And the stadiums won't be totally full, but there will be a lot of home fans. And in that group in particular, Germany plays 2 games at home, and that's a German team that I think is a little bit on the downside. It's the last tournament for Yogi Löw, the coach, but they do get 2 group games at home. Hungary gets 2 games at home. And Portugal and France, 2 terrific teams, have to play multiple group games in away stadiums against fans that are going to be rooting against them. So I don't know how much that's going to impact things, but if you're Portugal and France, that's going to make things a little bit tougher. I think Portugal's fantastic. They've got a better team by far on paper than the one that won the tournament 5 years ago. Just a lot more complete. Not dominated by Cristiano Ronaldo anymore, but he's still there. That group's going to be really intense.
Well, if we're doing football for dummies here, Grant, I mean, you mentioned Ronaldo. Everyone knows him. But give us a couple of players who people should have their eye on here. If you're like us and every couple of years you're like, all right, the Euros are here, I'm in. The World Cup is here, I'm in. Give us a couple of players that people should be focused on for the tournament.
Mbappe.
Kylian Mbappe is still very, very young, but pushing to be recognized as the next best player in the world to sort of break the stranglehold that Messi and Ronaldo have had on that position over the last 12 years or so. And Mbappe comes into this tournament fully fit, you know, ready to go, and I think he could have an extremely big tournament. Robert Lewandowski right now for Poland is, most people would agree, I think, the best center forward in the world over the last few years, and he's done so much over the years for Bayern Munich, but hasn't done as much for Poland. And it's a little bit more of a one-man gang for Lewandowski with Poland. So will he be able to sort of put that team on his back and take them deep into the tournament? You know, for England, Harry Kane, another terrific scorer, and this is a good England team, a good vibe about it. You know, could Harry Kane be the Golden Boot winner? Or, you know, might it be Romelu Lukaku from Belgium, who had a fantastic season for Inter in Italy? And you know, all these guys are going to be playing. So I'm really excited to see this tournament as it plays out.
It's going to be awesome. He is New York Times bestselling author, host of Football with Grant Wall podcast. He is Grant Wall. Really appreciate the time, and thanks for putting up with us here, Grant. Enjoy the tournament. We'll do it again down the road.
My pleasure. Take care, guys.
There's Grant Wall, and he mentioned a guy that we have not mentioned on the show in a few years, Yogi Löw, the scratch-and-sniff head coach manager of
Germany.
And I've got him. I got Germany, and you know he's going out on top. He's going to be scratching and sniffing all throughout Europe for the next month, and I picture July 11th, him putting on an absolute clinic.
No, I'll bet you clinic. $500 he doesn't stick his hands down his pants and then smell after.
Are you insane, dude? He can't help himself. I can't even take that bet. I can't accept that bet.
We'll make it a friendly $20 bet. I bet he does not do that.
Oh, done. By the time we hit the first half of the first game, this guy's going to be firing.
So you're telling me this guy's been on every social media account for the last 5 years scratching his rear end and putting his fingertips to his nostrils, and you think he's going to do that again?
Noodles?
Yes.
Noodles.
I'm telling you right now.
Why is Noodles speaking for this guy? He knows not to do it.
Noodles
I'm telling
knows.
You right now, Nazem Kadri got suspended three years in a row, or three of four?
Three of four, yep.
So why
he's
is
not
Yogi Löw not going to scratch and sniff? They can't help themselves.
Exactly. Yogi Löw, there he is. He's looking at his watch. A quick little what's up? What's going on here?
Little peek.
Dude, the anthems will be wrapping up, and this guy will be – he can't help himself.
He's cut a hole in his pocket, too. That's the thing. He's got his hand in
–
guy, you have no idea. I'm telling you right now,
he's got a trapdoor in his pocket – that sends him to La La Land, and then it's go
doesn't
time.
He do the armpits? Like
he does
the, like,
Mary
the
Catherine,
armpit,
Gallagher,
and then the, yeah, it is, this guy can't help himself.
He can't, man. And now he's going out. This is it for him. This is his swan song. This is his scratch and sniff song. So you think, why would he change now?
He's been told, everyone's watching, do not stick your hand down your pants.
It would be better
your fingertips in your nostrils.
It would be better if he showed up with a pair of oven mitts on, where they couldn't get to his yip.
Get Vladdy Guerrero's oven mitts that he runs the bases with, and he can't do it.
One thing we have to clarify, though, will he have a mask on? Because if he's got a mask on, then all bets are off. They have to come off the board. Although he could work his way around a mask.
If he creeps his fingers under a mask for a smell, it's a suspension.
Well, he stuck his mask under his armpit, and now he's going to just stick it on his face. He's actually got a better scenario, because he can rub the inside of the mask on his armpit and then stick it to his yip for hours on end.
He can. It's like he's hotboxing himself with his own...
Yeah, sweat or whatever he likes to do.
It's not a good scene, but you're right. I mean, this guy, I fully expect it. I mean, he's mastered it. He has mastered the science of what he does on the sideline, and I fully expect it to continue. So I will take that bet. And I love where we're at here. The O-Dog, you're on Poland, France, Italy, the Netherlands. I've never heard a guest basically say that's the worst pick in the history of a draft, more
Al's
so than
brother
Grant.
Sends me a message, you've got to take Netherlands. Why he's saying something like that. Then we get a professional analyst on saying, it's a disaster. Thank you, Al's brother, for not knowing squat.
I love how you said the coach is like,
no, he has no business.
Said
the coach has no business being there.
Yeah.
No business being there. Like, I've never heard that. Like, you go on a show or anything, like, you try to be, like, slightly polite. He's like, yeah, I can't believe they hired this guy.
Honestly, it's Ron Rolston wrapped up into Peter Horacek at the end of the 14-15 season, and that's who's running the sidelines for the Netherlands. So that's not good. Noodles, you're on Hungary, Belgium, Spain, and Portugal. That is a really good, good team.
I'm feeling really good about my team. I really am.
I like
it. I have no idea, so we'll see how it goes.
Well, I'm on Scotland, England, Denmark, and Germany, and Scotland and England are in the same group, so Scotland's not getting through. I just don't see it. They're happy to be there. Like, they're a classic example of a team happy to be there, but we'll see what's up. All right, Pierre LeBrun, our TSN Hockey Insider, will join us, get his take on Game 6 tonight. Avs taking on the Vegas Golden Knights, what he thought of the Islanders getting through, how the Islanders match up with Tampa. There's a lot to get into with Pierre. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, Pierre LeBrun, our TSN Hockey Insider, will join us in a moment. Columbus has hired Brad Larsen as their new head coach. He's been on their staff as an assistant for a long time. And, you know, I'm not sure much about him. I don't know a lot about his background. We'll see what Pierre can tell us. But, you know, it kind of feels like in Columbus, they need someone who's going to be able to get them through a storm here for the next 2 or 3 years. Like, this year was really ugly. Really, really ugly.
Top onto that, Seth Jones information coming out that he's basically not staying there. So that's incredible, man. Another guy saying, check, please.
Yeah, that's tough. I don't like that, though. Like, I know guys get it, but, like, where, like, in
who's
Seth
motivated
Jones,
to leak that? Who's motivated to leak that? The player or the, like, the team?
Yeah,
the, like,
I don't know. I mean, I don't know, but it just, I don't like the big picture of that. Like, you're, like, all of a sudden, everyone thinks the grass is greener on the other side. Like, how many of these guys have left there and gone on to bigger and brighter things?
Well,
you know what
Panarin
I mean?
Panarin has, clearly.
Panarin. But the Rangers didn't make the playoffs this year.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, and neither did Columbus, but I hear what you're saying.
Right.
And Bobrovsky hasn't gone so great for him
right.
in Florida, for sure. Ryan Johansson, he went to a cup final.
Yeah.
Duchesne, he's in Nashville. Yeah. But anyway, let's bring in our TSN Hockey Insider, Pierre LeBrun. Pierre, we just mentioned that the Blue Jackets have hired Brad Larsen as their head coach. He's been on the staff for a long time. Am I correct? Would you agree with my stance that Columbus is preparing for a bit of a dark storm in the next 2 or 3 years? Like, it might be a little bit ugly there, and they need someone to kind of get them through it? Or do they feel like they can get back on the horse and win again fairly quickly?
You know, I had Yermo Kekalainen on my podcast about a month ago, and certainly their hope was to get right back on it, but that was before they got the news from Seth Jones' camp that he was likely not going to sign an extension this summer. So I think that has changed a lot in my mind, right?
Yep.
So, Kekalainen's going to have a news conference tomorrow and explain his thoughts on hiring Brad Larsen. I know that he's really liked in the organization, liked by the players. It's an interesting one. It's not like they just decided, let's just hire internally and not even talk to anyone. They talked to a lot of candidates. I mean, they actually had a lot of Zoom calls with different coaches, and Rick Tocchet, Jerry Gallant, both among those who had interviews with Columbus, but among others. But they went internal. And, yeah, I think at the end of the day, if they end up having to trade Seth Jones, it's hard to see how they get the kind of pieces back where they can just go back to being a playoff team again. Although there are some teams in a position to perhaps offer those pieces more than others. Like, for example, there's so many teams that could use Seth Jones. The guy's an absolute stud. But not everyone can offer the same kind of pieces where perhaps players already in their early to mid-20s that can jump in and help Columbus. I think one of those teams is Philadelphia. Now, the Flyers had a really disappointing season. They got a whole batch of guys in their 20s on that team, and they got a big hole on their right side. Matt Niskanen surprised them by retiring after the bubble last year. Left a big void on that blue line. plus they had guys on that blue line that really struggled this year. I will tell you right now, I don't know if he's going to be a Flyer because there's going to be about 24 teams inquiring on Seth Jones, but the Flyers are going to be in there. And they might have pieces that are more appealing to Columbus in terms of not just being draft picks and prospects, perhaps, and what other teams are going to be willing to throw on the table. So that's one thing to perhaps think about.
It makes sense to trade him this summer, though, doesn't it, Pierre? I mean, there's no sense of the team's going to be terrible next year. There's no sense of keeping him around on a bad team.
No, it's bang on, O'Dog. And the reason why you wouldn't do it, there are some circumstances where you say, you know what, let's show him that we've got a bounce back in our step, we've got a new coach, and we make the playoffs, and there's new sense of enthusiasm. Not that team, because they've done that. They've done the old let's gamble, and they did it with Panarin and Bobrovsky. Now, of course, hindsight being everything, they missed Panarin terribly, but probably happy that whatever offer they made of Bobrovsky wasn't signed, because he looks like he's not on his game right now, and he's making $10 million a year in Florida. But my point is, they went down that road where they took a chance with a couple of big-time UFAs and said, you know, we're going to go for it. And by the way, they did beat the 62-win Lightning that year in the first round of the playoffs, but those guys still bolted. You know, Pierre-Luc Dubois asked for a trade. And somewhat under the radar, you know, Josh Anderson wasn't signing whatever was on the table last offseason either, and that kind of forced a trade to Montreal. So Seth Jones not signing right now with a year left on his deal, they have no choice in my mind. They have to move him this offseason at his maximum value. They can't let this drag to the trade deadline next year. It doesn't make any sense to me.
And it sounds like they're going to trade a goalie, too. I mean, you might have to. And I believe one of them is exempt, but they're, you know, both goaltenders kind of 27 years old and making $4 million a year. Like, I think I keep hearing there's a marketplace for them. But, you know, that's another scenario where you'd be able to get some decent pieces back for some of these players that you're trading out. Like, if I could think of three teams right now that would want Elvis Merlikens.
Package deal.
You know what I mean?
Who,
but like,
and by the way, if Merlikens is the one traded, who's going to get the first tweet that Elvis left the building? All right.
Yeah, I've got a few ideas of who that would be.
Yeah,
I know. Now you know better than me, Noodles, but both those guys have shown some pretty decent 1A promise, if not 1B at least. Like, they've got game, and they're not going to keep both. They both have a year left on their deal, and there's not enough net to keep both. Now, it's Merzlikens, by the way, who's exempt for the expansion draft.
Right.
So would make sense to me, unless there's an overpay ahead of time, that you wait until July 21st to trade either Korpisalo or Merzlikens, which is fascinating, because those guys have a little more runaway left in their careers than some of the other guys that are going to be available in the goalie market. You know, the other goalie that just to switch off Columbus for a second, but since we're getting on the goalie market, Darcy Kemper just winning a gold medal for Canada, the World Championships. I'm intrigued by him and to see what his future holds. You know, you want to talk about teams that may have to go down a sort of rebuild. There's no question that Coyotes are. I mean, they need to get younger. Well, I mean, they did have a pretty veteran team the last few years. They made the playoffs last year, but they need to retool. That's why they hired Bill Armstrong. They didn't hire him to just try and keep patching it together. They need to do a real rebuild there, and I think that's his intention. And he's going to hire a young coach, or if not a young coach, a coach who's probably a first-time NHL head coach, I think.
I love that. But, a rebuild from what?
Well, you know.
From rubble.
Kemper has a year left on his deal at $4.5 million. And I like Darcy Kemper. And, you know, it's funny. I've been thinking about the Leafs a lot with him. You know, like, I wonder if Freddie Anderson walks, $4.5 million isn't a big tab for a guy who's pretty reliable and he can match up with Jack Campbell, and you got your 1A, 1B.
Great.
Wouldn't shock me if the Leafs inquired there this offseason.
Well, the only problem I had heard, and that was last year's market, was Kemper, Merzlikens, or Korpisalo. All of those were starting with a first rounder. Leafs don't have any, they don't have any picks. They
future
don't have anything
ones,
to play
but
with.
Yeah, they've given up a lot recently.
Right.
Like, that's the crazy part about that, because you mentioned it. Like, even if you connect Seth Jones to, like, Philadelphia needs a guy like Merzlikens or Kemper to come in there as well to help you know, to play with Carter Hart and help him along the way. That would be a guy I would circle for Freddie Anderson, like a free agent
Noodles
signing.
In the future, just say Columbus goalie.
Yeah, I can't.
It's burned you. It just keeps coming up.
We've I try. You know what I try to respect?
Merlickens.
Let's just say Elvis. As long as Elvis. You guys know Elvis, I apologize.
I was going to say, I think you could go first name basis with him. He's pretty much the only Elvis in the NHL right now.
But, yeah, exactly. For Elvis
and the goalie carousel is going to be a story in itself. It often is, I guess, every year. But with the Seattle expansion draft, teams are going to make some interesting decisions with that. And, you know, if I'm Ron Francis in Seattle, and I'm for sure he's thought of this, but you can get involved in it and be sort of a player for between other teams on this, you know. Yeah. There could be some interesting decisions here. I might take this, one of my three goalies might be a guy ends up on your team by the end of the summer, and what are you going to give me? I think those conversations are happening right now as well, as they should. And there's some interesting things. I actually have a story coming out tomorrow, guys, in The Athletic on Seattle. There's some wrinkles to the rules that a lot of people don't realize. And one really interesting one to me, and I wanted to drop this for you guys, is that if they sign, there's a free agent window, July 18th to July 21st. And they can sign a player from another team during those 3 days, and they can sign them to the max 8-year deal, not just seven. There's a wrinkle in there that the NHLPA put in, where they can go max 8 years with potential free agents in that window before the expansion draft. And I think that's pretty interesting in terms of some decisions by some big-time players. I don't know if Seattle's going to go down that road. Vegas didn't really go down the free agent road in 2017 around their expansion draft process, but that's not to say Seattle wouldn't.
Well, I think if we've learned anything from Vegas is it probably will never happen again. You know, accumulating what they accumulated, what they got league-wide. It's crazy who they pulled in. Like, Marchessault scores a couple of times. You know, Riley Smith is still there. You've got Shea Theodore as a throw-in, so you don't take a couple of other guys like Cam
Alex
Fowler.
Alex Tuck was a guy.
Yeah, he was. Right. And like that, listen, they're going to get some good players that were not perceived as good players. But what Vegas also did was they loaded up on picks, and then they eventually traded them for Stone, for Pacioretty. They went up there and signed Pietrangelo. You know, they got old pretty quickly. And I wonder if Seattle, like you mentioned the free agency stuff, Eichel is not a free agent. Seth Jones is not a free agent. I don't know if either guy would have any interest in going there. But if you can accumulate a ton of picks and a ton of youth, imagine starting your new franchise with Eichel and Jones if you could pull that off.
That'd be crazy.
Be crazy. Well, what an introduction to the league.
Yeah, and the interesting thing, Brian, is that at the outset, like, people were hurting after the Vegas expansion draft. So many teams got played. Mm-hmm. And a lot of team executives are telling me, never again. We're not doing a side deal. We're not overthinking it. Seattle can take who they want. We're not making a trade with them. We're not doing this again. And I think that was genuine to some degree. And then we had a world pandemic, which resulted in a flat salary cap for a bunch of years now in the NHL. And now you got teams who have no choice. Like, Tampa Bay right now has $85 million committed to 14 players for next year. The cap's 81.5. So I guarantee you that if it's not Seattle or another team, that Tampa is going to have to go to Seattle and say, Tyler Johnson's from your neck of the woods. He's a Washington boy. Do you need a first-round pick or top prospect to take him, because we're in a jam here? And there are other teams are going to have that conversation with them because of everything changed with the flat cap. Suddenly, Seattle went forward. No one's going to give us a side deal because they learned from Vegas to bang, flat cap. It put Ron Francis right back in the driver's seat in this expansion draft process. So I agree. I talked to an AGM the other day. It was like he's trying to convince his GM, you know, don't do, you know, let them take who they want. We're not going to overthink it. Yes, it hurts to lose X player, but it's better than losing X player and another X player with a side deal and they still take a guy. Let's just hang in there and take our medicine. I am hearing that, but I will tell you the flat cap is a problem for a lot of teams.
Pierre, you touched on the Leafs possibly being interested in Kemper. What other kind of things do you think they'll be dabbling in this offseason to kind of go back at this and just reshape the group that they have?
So, listen, they're still, I think, in this stage where they're decompressing and then trying to figure out, you know, how do we, you know, half their roster's up, right? They got all these UFAs. Now, none of them are the pertinent guys. It's the support staff, right? And they're in this situation where they're looking at this almost if they keep signing guys to win your deals, which, is, by the way, I have no problem with. I mean, that helps manage your cap. So what'll be interesting to me is, number one, Morgan Rielly. He's got a year left. I mean, we talk about Seth Jones all the time, but the Leafs have basically a very similar decision with Morgan Rielly. You have to go to J.P. Barry and to Morgan Rielly and have a very blunt discussion, I think, before you almost do anything else. And what's the number? We want you. You're a great leader. You've been a great Leaf, but what's the number? I don't know that they can get to the number that represents market for him. In fact, I'm pretty sure they can. So, you know, I asked Cal Dubas this question on his season-ending media availability last week. I said, well, you know, you've shown that you're comfortable letting a key guy play out his deal. Zach Hyman, as an example, Freddie Anderson. Are you willing to do the same thing with Morgan Rielly? And I was actually surprised by his answer. I don't know if you guys were listening.
Yeah, I was.
But he said that was more of a pandemic thing and that it's actually probably not ideal that that happened. That was his answer. So I took from that that he is going to go there first, figure out the Rielly thing, and then go from there.
What does a pandemic have to do with a phone call?
Well, no, his was that there were a lot of guys around the league with the flat cap and the Wild. There are a lot of guys that didn't get signed. He's right. There are a lot of guys that didn't get signed. Landeskog, a lot of guys that you thought in a normal world would have had the extension when you're out that didn't get done last year with all the uncertainty of the finances. Mm. There's no question that's true.
Well, before we get to all this, we still have the Stanley Cup playoffs. We're not even into the third round. And we're chatting with Pierre LeBrun. The Habs are sitting pretty right now. I don't think they're going to love whoever they play against because they're going to be underdogs. Ooh. And they're either flying to Vegas or flying to Colorado, and that's not going to be easy. But I have to believe they're pushing for a Colorado win tonight. Push it to seven, sit back, get Petrie healthy, you know, among others. And do you think there's one team in particular, if you caught a candid moment with the Habs, who they would pick? Would it be Vegas or Colorado that you think they could match up better against and they'd feel good about their chances?
And if the expression pick your poison ever held true, this would be it.
Right.
I mean, is there any chance the Stanley Cup final is being played right now between Colorado and Vegas? And that's no offense to the Habs, no offense to anyone else. I mean, Tampa's looking pretty darn good.
Yeah, I'm not sleeping on Tampa.
No way.
Yeah, right. But that is two juggernauts taking swings right now. Out west. I will tell you this, Brian. I'm not sure I agree that the Habs hope this, that series goes to seven. I think you look at Winnipeg's 9-day rest between series, and I think actually the series ending tonight would be better timing for Montreal, by the way. You're always trying to find that sweet spot, and you know, how much is too much rest or enough rest, and I'm not sure that it going seven and the Habs being on the sidelines for 9-10 days, it would be great for them either, but I guess if I had to, it's really incredible to try and think which team is a better matchup for Montreal because those two teams are unbelievable. But the Habs just shut down an incredibly skilled Leafs team with high-end octane guys, and then they shut down a Jets team with high-end octane forwards. I would think that Colorado would at least be in some semblance a more similar matchup that way than a more heavy Vegas team that actually might look at Montreal's big four defense and say, you know, been there, done that. Don't worry about that. We got lots of big guys. So I think deep down, even though I think Nathan MacKinnon is a terror and would be so scary to defend, I think maybe Vegas is the matchup for Montreal if you're trying to figure out which upset is more likely.
Yeah, I agree with you, Pierre. The only thing that I kept thinking about is, and if it's literally a coin flip, You're having to go into a crazy Vegas building, or you're having to go to the top of a mountain in Colorado. Like, I kept thinking about, like, the altitude. I'm telling you, I hated playing in Colorado for the first 10 to 15 minutes of a game because your legs felt like they were tree trunks. You couldn't, and like, you know, I know guys are in great shape getting in there. That's the one thing. If there was one thing that separated it, if these teams were a coin flip, would be the buildings you play in. One feels like you're at the top of the mountain. The other one feels like you're at the Bellagio, and it's a rock star party.
One time we play in Colorado, and Pat Quinn tells the boys before we get off the bus, he's like, "Guys, you know tomorrow's a big game, but got some sponsors here from Coors Light. They want to meet us at the restaurant down the street. So we got to do what we got to do, and we got to go say hi." I did not have a good game the next game. Sponsors from Coors Light, we have to go say hi to.
The mountains were calling, and they were blue.
You see what I wish, O-Dog? I wish, O-Dog, that you would have told the media that in that moment, right, after the game, as opposed to wait 20 years later. But anyway. You know,
what a mic drop that would have been. We got spanked tonight. I was awful because we were with the Coors Light reps last night.
Yeah. Sponsors.
What do you want us to do here? I will say, what a shock to the system would be if you go to Vegas. You have been in Canada that has been shut down unlike anywhere else in the world in many ways or close to it. And then you fly into Vegas, and Vegas is wide open, and it's Vegas. It's Vegas. Oof. Like, they're professional. Now, you're in the third round. You're not going anywhere. But, man, it would be – imagine you looking outside your hotel room. You're like, I have to get out there. I have to party. I got to do it.
And that's the thing. That what I understand of the deal that that basically the NHL has with the Canadian government on allowing the Habs to play at home in the third round is that it's a pretty tight protocol going forward, again, for the Habs when they're in either Vegas or Colorado. And, by the way, and this is probably the most pertinent part, for Vegas or Colorado, when they come to Montreal, they have to kind of dial back to what it was before in the season, because they've had loosened protocols here as the years gone on with their vaccinations and everything. They're going to have to dial back to Canadian style protocols for the third round when they come to Montreal, which I'm sure isn't going to be too exciting for the players on those teams.
No kidding. Well, yeah, I mean, this is where it should be a balance. Playground, like we've talked about it all year. Robin Lehner's, if it's Vegas, is going to be in the series. You know, I thought it was fair and I thought it was understandable that the players south of the border that had been vaccinated should be able to live a little bit more. I don't think that should be the case against Montreal. Like, if the Habs have to stay in their hotel room, Vegas shouldn't be able to go out for dinner with their wives.
They shouldn't.
Now you're dealing with an imbalance. Like, this is it. You make it this far, the Cup's right around the corner, you got to beat a Canadian team for 10 days, sorry, we're back to square one, because they can't do it.
Yeah,
and that'd be my stance, and I'll bet you they're going to be yelling and screaming about that in Montreal.
You, of all people, are going to tell a team to...
What's that?
There's going to be an imbalance in the stands as it is.
That already is.
For sure.
Okay. Yeah, you already got that going for you, but it's not going to happen, clearly. Anyway, we'll leave it there. Game 6 tonight. Enjoy it, buddy. We'll do it again down the road.
Right on, right on. All right, boys. Talk to you later.
There he is, Pierre LeBrun, our TSN Hockey Insider.
You, of all people that love Vegas, you're going to shut things down like that?
You're
shut down. You're out of line and you're shut down.
You would have a mustache and a beard and you would be down. You would, like, sneak out to go down to the casino to lay some bets.
Yes. Like, I'm not saying me personally, degenerate Brian Hayes, should be subjected to these rules. What I'm saying is, during the year when Lehner said what he said, I understood what he was talking about, because it wasn't about the game. It was about mental health and living, and you're in a pandemic.
Right.
And from that standpoint, I agreed with him. Like, it sucks that up in Canada you couldn't do it, but down here I've got, you know, a wife, kids, we're allowed to live, I want to live. This feels like a very different scenario where the other team can't do it. The team you're competing against to go to a Stanley Cup final has to sit in their hotel room. It's not going to change. I haven't heard anything on it that would suggest the league is going to force Vegas and or Colorado to live differently in, like, a bubble. But I think that's pretty much an advantage, is it not? Like, you're living your own life, doing your own thing, where the Habs are back to square one bubble life.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, it is a small, but we always talk about a little layer here, a little percentage there. Like, it does chip away at you, but I think the Habs are so
they're
entrenched
used to
it.
Yeah, they're used to it. Anyway. I mean, the Habs are going to go with it because they have to and they don't have a choice.
The bottom line, the most important thing on the line before we go is the Stanley Cup, not drinking and social things.
That's what I'm saying. True. Like, me as me, yeah, I have a different view of Vegas. Yes. I don't think these guys will. In fact, I know they won't. Yeah. Their eye will be on the prize, as it should be. We'll come back and wrap up a busy afternoon, tee up the games tonight. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, Euro 2020 begins tomorrow, and we love it. We're all over it. Noodles, you are on Hungary, Belgium, Spain and Portugal.
Correct.
Very, very solid team.
Yep.
Oh, you're on Poland, France, and Italy. Awesome. The Netherlands, they suck, and they're not going to do anything, but still not a bad pick.
Yeah.
And I'm on Scotland, England, Germany, and Denmark.
Yeah.
Don't love
the
my
Danes.
Team.
The Danes, and never
Danes.
Know.
Yep, the Danes. Just those countries never win, you know. They just generally don't win. It's usually the powerhouses, but we'll see. So that starts tomorrow right here on TSN. You can watch it on TSN as well throughout the whole tournament. It's going to be an awesome month of footy, and we will be all over it throughout the month as well. We're actually not starting until 5 o'clock tomorrow, so we're out of here. Enjoy your evenings. Enjoy the games. We're back tomorrow at?
Merzliskin's, 5 p.m.
We'll chat then, Elvis.
You've been listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3, powered by Scarborough Nissan. Driving satisfaction. It's the all-in clear-out sales event. Finance a 2020 Rogue S for 0% APR for 84 months, or get an up to $5,500 cash purchase bonus on select other models. Scarborough Nissan, Eglinton Avenue East at Warden.